It's Sound Effect on KNKX. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and today's theme is In Traffic. As a longtime nature lover, Todd Vandevert went right from college at WSU to a job in habitat management for Washington State. But it only took a couple of years before he had a realization.
You can provide everything wildlife needs, but if you don't provide them the protection from bad people, it's all for nothing.
So Todd became a fish and wildlife detective, spending decades busting bad guys, mostly in the fish and shellfish industries. And then in 2010, he went full cloak and dagger, an undercover sting known as Operation Cody. It was targeting what was kind of a blind spot in law enforcement, illegal wildlife trafficking. It would bring Vandevert face to face with criminals, kingpins, and grifters, and eventually capture perpetrators from Everett all the way to Hong Kong. Along with his partner, another wildlife detective, Vandevert first had to come up with a cover story.
Well, we were husband and wife, Tom and Tina Davis, out of Everett, Washington, and we ran a small business named Best of the Wild.
And did you have backstories for yourselves besides being married?
Yeah, it was, you're leading two lives, obviously. You're leading your work life of this is who I am and this is where I'm from and all this, and then your personal life. And for example, how long have you been married? Where'd you get married? You guys have a dog.
So walk me through a contact that you would have with a customer slash, you know, perpetrator.
Both Sergeant Marstad and I, when we set out on this operation, one of our primary things was to make sure that we focused on the people that were the worst of the worst and not the people that just didn't understand the complex regulations. We made a strong, conscientious effort to try and make sure that everybody we dealt with was fully aware that what they were doing was illegal and didn't have a problem with doing so.
How would you do that without scaring them off?
Well, sometimes they informed us. I mean, we had plenty of individuals that would tell us that what they were doing was illegal and we better keep our mouth shut and that kind of thing. And if that was the case, obviously there was no need for further discussion. Other times, and it was not uncommon, we probably turned down, I would say, 85% of the offers that we received. You know, we had some that just outright said, well, I didn't know it was illegal. I don't want to get involved. Then we had others that you could tell that they were giving it a lot of thought and hesitating. And that was the case. I just told them, I'm not interested. We didn't capture anybody in this net that wasn't knowing and intentionally breaking the law.
What were some of the other things besides deer and elk meat that people tried to trade in?
Virtually all the Northwest species. I mean, everything from owls, eagles, hawks, game birds, bighorn sheep, mountain goats, mountain lion, a lot of demand for bear parts, bear paws, bear gallbladder, bear penis.
Why were those bear parts in such demand?
The majority of the demand for bear parts comes from Asia, comes from South Korea, and also comes from China. And so they use it for medicinal purposes. Bear gallbladder is used for medicinal purposes, and there's a very, very high demand, and there's a lot of money involved in it.
How does the market for those work?
It's like anything else. The more people that handle it, the more the price goes up. Most of the poachers that harvest gallbladder and sell them are getting in the neighborhood of $100 to $200 per gallbladder. If you can get them to Hong Kong, China, Korea, you know, the markup just keeps going, but you can potentially be talking about $4,000 or $5,000 for that same gallbladder.
So can you think of an example of one and just walk me through it? Yeah. One that was a criminal.
We had an individual that was alleged to be involved in this activity of selling deer and elk meat.
Which is not legal.
No, it's a felony level crime. So, and I didn't have to have a conversation of the illegality with him. He told me how illegal it was. We got into what turned out to be one of the larger wildlife traffickers in Washington's history.
So what happened next after you guys sort of made an agreement to do business together?
Well, on that particular one, he was more cautious than most. So he wanted to meet us and interview us. And so we set up a time and place. The place was his residence, and we went and met him. And he had some guys that he referred to as his soldiers. And he just started firing questions at us about our background, where we came from, about our business, et cetera.
What was that like? You're in basically a wildlife mob's den, right?
Yeah. I mean, I expected it to be fairly intense, and that one was. he multiple times warned us about the consequences of running our mouths, talking too much, getting caught, that kind of stuff. And he talked about shooting a guy in his backyard and all kinds of, less than subtle hints as to what would be our demise if we were to get him in trouble.
But once he was satisfied that you guys were the real deal?
He gave me a date and time to come back and pick up the first order of deer and elk meat.
And then did you have an ongoing relationship with that?
We did. From
meat
the
dealer?
That individual, from the beginning of the operation to the end, we continued to deal with him.
What kind of people generally were the traffickers and others that you dealt with?
That's the problem. There was no generality. There was no typical on this. It went everything from, a guy that was living in a million-dollar house to meth addicts living in a wall tent. So we had the whole spectrum. It basically was anybody that had access to a computer, could look things up on the internet. So it was that broad.
Can you think of another example of a memorable transaction or character that you encountered in this work?
We had one guy in the Yakima area that I would call him a higher risk guy. He was much bigger than myself and had quite an attitude and had the looks of a seasoned fighter. He had called us out of the blue. He contacted us and wanted to do business with us. And when we met with him, he threw open the door of his vehicle and came charging at me like a bull. I mean, fist clenched, and I thought, he's going to tear me up. And he stopped short and started screaming at me, "Are you a game warden?" And we've been through that before, not quite that exaggerated, but we've been down that road before, being accused of being cops or game wardens and so forth. And I said, "No, absolutely not. Where'd you come up with that?" And I said, I didn't call you. You called me. So if anybody is trying to set somebody up, it seems like you're trying to set me up. And so being the sarcastic person I am, I pointed at my partner and said, what about her? Maybe she's a game warden. And so he just laughed, and then we were done. We went on and did quite a bit of business with him after that.
So how did Operation Cody come to an end?
It came to an end on September 18th, 2012, when we did the takedowns. We had jurisdictions all the way to the East Coast, Hong Kong, all the West Coast. We had California, Oregon, Idaho, Montana involved, Oklahoma. And we ended up with over 1,000 criminal charges, almost all felony-level crime.
And did you arrest that deer and elk kingpin guy?
We did.
Yes. Did he get put away?
No. He was like many others were. The best way I can put it, I was extremely disappointed in his sentence. That's one of the things that is a really tough pill to swallow when you work in fish and wildlife law enforcement, is a lot of judges and many prosecutors don't take it seriously. They consider it a victimless crime. No blood, no foul. Nobody was hurt. And so it's not uncommon to get a relatively light sentence for what we consider to be a very serious crime. And he was a classic example of it.
Why is this work important to you?
Somebody has to guard our natural resources, our wildlife. Somebody has to make sure that, and I know this sounds kind of corny, but for my kids and kids' kids and so forth for the future, that they're still there, that they still can go out and see these animals in the wild in their wild state, that you don't have to go to the Woodland Park Zoo to see an eagle anymore. Because if you allow people to just run amok and do whatever they want, we'd lose it all.
Well, Todd Vandevert is a retired Washington fish and wildlife detective, and he wrote a book about his undercover sting operation, and you can find a link to that at our website, knksoundeffect.org. Todd, thank you so much.
Thank you.